And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 683. I was going to say 4. It's been a while since that one. 683. Coming at you to recap another week in Fab, week 21 Fab. We're going to talk some Batcast, as it was named a while back by Ben. And we'll see some maybe gainers and followers over the last month as we have at least a little bit of data now to tinker with and still play. I have no idea what we're doing, but have some fun with it along the way. And much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDMTrick. And my guest, as usual, on our Mondays here, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Ted, how are we doing, my friend?
You're both doing very well. Thanks again for having me on. It's going to be good to look at the bad cast. Like you said, I kind of coined that term, I guess, a while ago. But
I doubt
if it's going to stick, only for us. But yeah, and I'm starting to feel the pressure of setting lineups. So we didn't really talk too much about that before the show, but it's getting down to the nitty gritty. And laboring in my head earlier today about who I wanted to start for a team or two, and it's what we play for, but it's unfortunately one of the downsides too, I guess. It's that added stress that you end up getting.
Yep, I was doing the same thing beforehand. Like, I have Lawrence Butler sitting on a lot of first halves of the week because of other situations, and you know, Mookie Betts came back, which is a great problem to have, but I'm just being like, there's a lot of moving and shaking, and a lot of it was to do with the Fab moves I make, which we'll talk about later, because like I told Ryan on Thursday night's Fab preview that I'm going to be a lot more aggressive, like in a couple leagues where I really need hitting down the stretch here. So my bench is a lot more hitter inducive in certain teams, and having to make tougher decisions is not as fun as it sounds. So because you already know how that's going to go, Ben, it's going to be the guy you sit is going to be the one that goes off and vice versa. And it's going to make you feel so good when it's all said and done. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, but definitely something we'll hit on when we talk Fab later this week. But before we get it there, remind everybody, if they don't know for some weird reason by now by listening to the show, what you got going on over there at Sports Ethos?
Yep, thanks. So I'm doing my weekly SP streamer article tailored to the NFBC main event, going off that roster rate. And each week I'm giving the readers two pitchers based on matchups, so more like this a one-time deal type thing, and then also two based on how they've been performing lately. As I wrote in this past Sunday's article, kind of running out of time to have those, what I call merit-based ads, enough time to review. So those are going to be wrapping up in the next few weeks. And then this is going to go solely for the streamers, for the one week starters. And then, yep, that's it for right now. And so,
yep, it's the time of the year to basically pick guys up to help you right now, because there ain't a whole lot more to go as we get moving here. And that's another... we'll talk about one of the drops I made, which I've heard by listening to other content today, a lot more people made that drop this week, but might have surprised some. So we'll get to that in a bit. But let's talk Batcast. And Ben and I, we talked about Batcast on the show when it first came out. And then we've kind of talked, I don't know if like on the air as much as off the air, about different ideas. And Ben's very good with his graphs and everything. He went to college, if you guys didn't know that. So that's big. And so I mentioned to him, I said, hey, I got an idea for next week. Cause as the year goes on, I've mentioned it on this show and others, content gets tougher because like Ben mentioned about the pitching, it's more about like, we need it now. Like we can't be looking at, hey, this guy's, you know, trending this direction or that direction. And you can use it a little, but not a lot anymore. And I said, hey, how about we have some fun? Let's look at Batcast. We have a couple months of data now. Let's see if people that gained or lost bat speed, if we saw any correlations anywhere else. So, Ben, before we get into player by player, the floor is yours because you put together a WRC plus and a bat speed situation here. But what did you find out when we did that?
Sure. Yeah. So this will be a little tough to explain. We're not going to have it up on the live stream either. So if you have any questions, if something I say doesn't make sense, just stop me and I'll try to explain it, because I want to be as clear as possible for the listeners. So, yeah, you mentioned I have the bat speed for June and July, and then the associated WRC plus for both months on the sheet here, then just the delta between July minus June. So a positive delta means the player's bat speed increased from July to June. And then conversely, if it's negative, it means their bat speed fell. And then just for our own sanity's sake, and we'll just mention it now before we dive into the players, is I provided two graphs to the side. And so on the x-axis of both is the bat speed, and then one of the graphs is for June, one's for July, and then the y-axis for both is the WRC plus. So they're just two scatter plots, and then I added in the trend line to see how correlated the two are. And so the the statistic I'm looking at here is the R-squared value, which sometimes people talk about it on Twitter and podcasts, but it's a statistical term. It kind of, the point of it is to show how much variability in the x-axis or in the y-axis comes from the x-axis metric. So in this case, how much of the player's WRC plus can be predicted from their bat speed. And you obviously you want a higher correlation. So the bigger the R squared, the more the, in this case, the bat speed has an effect on the player's WRC plus. But for both months, the R squared is pretty low. In June, it was 0.09. And in July, it was 0.11. So pretty low. And then a common term also is correlation coefficient. So if you took the square root of the R squared, you get the correlation coefficient. And that's more common for talking about correlation. But R squared, this is a different level up, same idea. So with all that said, the basis of this is, so far, bat speed doesn't really mean much if you're trying to predict WRC plus. And it's not a fantasy stat, but typically if a hitter has a good WRC plus, they're probably good for fantasy. And it's hard to tell from just 2 1-month samples. I mean, based on how bad the R squareds are for the 2 months, I doubt it will improve all that much for the full season. But that's something I want to look at the end of the year, is to see, is there a stat that bat speed can be used to hopefully, quote unquote, predict, or something that aligns closely with it? Because one thing I always speculated to myself is, so we were talking about Stan before about his drop and his production. He's one of the, we'll probably talk about him. But I think he was the leader of bat speed when it first got released, and people were noting, okay, well, he strikes out a lot, but he has a ton of power. So my theory is that at a certain point, the extra bat speed, it's kind of it's diminishing returns, because there's a sweet spot where you want to be like 2 miles per hour below Stanton, for example, or something. But once you get closer to Stanton's bat speed numbers, then maybe you don't want to swing that hard. I don't know. That's just something that I'm theorizing, but we can't really tell that from the data that we have here. I'd have to do a little more research, but I think what we have here could be interesting to talk about. There's a lot of red. I tried color coding it. Like, I know you like it when Ryan color codes things. It's also helpful for me too. It makes things stand out
easier. For us non-college students, it helps. I'm a color-oriented person. It helps out a lot. Yeah.
Bubba did go to college. He,
I'm just kidding.
Me and him took different paths in college.
Yes. We took much different paths in college. Yes, this is very true. And here we are. We meet again. So
Ryan's chiming in.
I actually understood what you said there, because math was one thing I was good at. I was a pen to paper person.
Now, well, that makes sense. You play fantasy baseball, you go to fantasy baseball.
There we go. Thank you. I appreciate that. But like the graphs, and once you get to the computer part, you lose me. So that's where I love having you guys around to put my ideas to work here. When you were talking there, it started dawning on me that, okay, I could see how WRC plus, because maybe it doesn't correlate to bat speed, because we associate bat speed potentially with more power. And then you mentioned the Stanton situation. Maybe there's too much bat speed, which causes more strikeouts. More strikeouts probably lowers your WRC plus, things along those lines. So like you said, you're going to toy with it more in the offseason. It's probably more like it's probably better to be associated with, say, an ISO, like a barrel rate, a hard hit. Like, there's going to be some metric in the end where it probably correlates a lot better that showcases power, because it'd be cool if it was a metric that didn't just include power, that included an overall, like, hey, this guy's a fantasy stud. That's why we thought WRC plus would be cool. And maybe it will in the end. Maybe there's something we're just missing to tweak with it to make it correlate a little better. But when you mentioned the Stanton example, especially, it kind of made sense. And like we talked off the air, Gurriel's a dropper, but he's been hurt a lot. So there's context involved in what's going on also. So it'll be interesting to kind of navigate through this when we talk about a bunch of players here and kind of pick apart the pros, the cons, maybe go deep on some, not so deep in others, just give our thoughts on how this bat speed, bat cast situation is going, because we're only handling the bat speed part of it. Like, if you go to the bat cast page on Savant, unofficially named, of course, like, there's squared up, there's blast, there's all those other things we talked about, but the main focus right now that we can kind of wrap our brains around is bat speed. So anything else, like Michael C. in the chat says, my guess is, like, exit velocity, barrels, they'll correlate better, just as barrels correlate more to power than max EV. Yes, that's pretty much where we're going. There's probably going to be something where we see it. But any other thoughts on that before we start picking players apart?
The one other thing I was thinking about that I could correlate to in a negative sense is batting average. Because if you recall, Arias and Stephen Kwan were at the bottom of the list. So it could be typically we were like, for this example, we were looking at, okay, you want a higher WRC plus, okay, higher bat speed. But if you have a lower bat speed, then you have a higher average. So it could be inversely related potentially. I mean, this is another thing I thought of. So I could see average being highly correlated, but in a negative sense, you know.
Yeah, then that could also be like, hey, we want bat speed based on contact skills, not squared up contact, blast contact. That's different. Like, just give me what are your contacts? What are your, like, your zone contacts per se on that? Like, there's a whole, like, I guarantee you that Kwan, Luis Arraez thing you're talking about, they probably have pretty good zone contacts when all things are said and done, and so on and so forth. So very interesting. And that's why it's going to be a fun topic. We said that a few months ago. Many people have said it. The idea of this is really cool. The application with it is very nuanced right now. There's a whole lot of questions involved in that. So let's get to some of the players here. Let's go down the list of the biggest differences. We're just really on the positive side of things right now, the green side, for those that are used to greens and reds like I am. Wilson Contreras led the way. He improved from 74.48 to 76.76, and he saw his WRC plus go from 71 to 159. And we're talking July and August here, or no, June and July. Sorry, June and July. I'm just a dodo there. But one thing I can remember right off the top of my head here, Ben, is Contreras did miss a bit of time. Let's see, when did he return from the IL? Yeah, he returned from the IL in late June. So that could be a big factor of this. But we've seen the production look pretty good. So any thoughts on Wilson Contreras, who's been worked? Maybe the bat speed is a big plus for him.
Yeah, he really sticks out as someone who has a much improved bat speed. Well, yeah, plus 2.29 miles per hour. And then his WRC plus doubled by more than doubled. Yeah, it's just him being healthy in the small sample in June, like you pointed out. He only played 8 games in June, and I just wish I was able to hold on to him where I had him, because I had to cut him in a couple spots. And this is why people are high on Wilson as a potentially the better Contreras, or Contreras, as some might say. So Wilson's a stud. He's going to play all the time, even in a crowded outfield. I mean, the Cardinals are getting kind of crowded now with players coming back from injury, and I'm sure Wilson will probably still get some DH time, but he's everything that people thought he could be.
Yeah, that Cardinals sidetrack. Cardinals situation is getting tough because Burleson, depends on how you want to pronounce it, and Nootbaar, they're almost turning into a platoon situation now, which as the season goes on, it is not ideal for what we're trying to accomplish. And I might wait a week or two at max, but Burleson's been very good to me this year, but if he's in the platoon, this could be a problem down the stretch. But it's great to see Contreras. He's going to be playing pretty much every day at DH or catcher, so that's a big plus as well. I mentioned Lourdes Gurriel, big time dropper, a lot of injuries there. Nolan Arenado has been a bit of a gainer as well. I still don't trust him a ton. You got Giancarlo here. I guess I'll throw it your way as the Yankees representative. And like I mentioned, Contreras, like basically 74.5 to almost 77, 76.75. You have Giancarlo, who started at 81. They went to 82.74. So he's already like way above the curve as it is. But he saw his WRC plus go 163 to 58. You're kind of hinting on it earlier, but he pretty much already exceeded the threshold, like you're saying. So is this, what should we take from this is what I'm trying to say. What may potentially take from this?
Yeah, so Stan's kind of the opposite of what happened to Contreras. So Stan had a full June, well, partially full. He had 18 games in June and a 927 OPS, and then he only played 3 games in July. So I think that's when he got hurt. It was the start of July. And I was mentioning above, but before, I was having a hard time trying to get him to have Stan appear on the Fangraphs portion where I got the WRC plus from, because I didn't know how many games I should have looked, but getting the plate appearance minimum for him to appear was tricky. I had to do it a few times. But the thing is with Stan, it'd be cool to see what he did in May, because everyone was saying was Stan, how bad he started out the season. He had a 767 OPS in April, a 728 OPS in May, and then, like I mentioned, 927 in June. But also in June, despite hitting over 300, he had 26 strikeouts and 69 at-bats. So I think he was over 33% because he only walked 7 times. So that's pretty close to 33% of a K rate. And like we seen with Stan, even when he hit the 50-something homers way back when, 2017 or whatever it was, he was just hitting a homer every day, it felt like, that during that summer. And he didn't get so hot. I mean, even with the 927 OPS in June, he only had five homers. So it's just him getting on a hot streak like he can do. And in July, like I said, Stan only had three games. And then so far in June, only six. I mean, in August, excuse me. But with the good OPS of 944 so far, it's just his swing's so long. And so one thing I was talking about earlier today, too, is with the bat speed. So he may not be swinging necessarily harder. I think they measure the speed of the barrel. So more, this is like a little physics tangent, but if you're someone like Sam with long arms, the barrel's going to be farther away from you. And then like when you're spinning, your hands, even though like your hands and the barrel are moving all together, technically your hands are moving slower than the end of the bat. So I think that's why Stanton has the highest bat speed, because he's so tall. But then I'm not sure where Judge stands. So I'm sure he'd be pretty close too, unless he keeps his hands in more. It's all about swing mechanics. So maybe Stan's just not swinging as hard as we think he is. It's just that the bat has to move so much quicker because he's so tall and like his arms are so long. And that would explain why he has such poor contact rates. But I don't know. Hopefully he gets it together. Like I said, August has been good so far. The Yankees need Stan, and it's just a matter of him. Well, one thing that's good, though, is he only has three strikeouts and 23 at-bats in August. So that's a huge improvement. But it's also six games. So we'll see if that sticks or if he goes back up to that near 30K rate. But he's going to be hot and cold the rest of the year, I think.
Yep, that's the Giancarlo way. As long as he's healthy, he'll be out there. He'll have his monster games. He'll have his other games. And you just kind of hope a little more good than bad. And at least this year, it looks like, you know, you got Jazz and company helping Judge, Soto helping Judge. So Stan doesn't have to do it all with himself. So that helps also. A fun one we have here is Luis Garcia Jr. of the Washington Nationals. He's been brought up on some recent Bloom boards. We talked about him for Fab stuff because there was a while there, Ben, when he was a popular pickup and people woke up to how good Luis Garcia has been doing. His bat speed has grown from 70.74 to 72.4 from June to July. And we saw his WRC plus go from 63 to 158, probably one of the larger gainers on this. And the dude, he's having a great year. He's got where's it at here? 14 home runs on the season to go with 19 stolen bases already. And you look at his June and July numbers, he had six total homers and seven total steals, but the batting average jumped 100 points essentially. So what are you seeing when you look at Luis Garcia? Because he's been absolutely outstanding and has almost outshining C.J. Abrams these days.
It's wild to say, because one was an afterthought in drafts and the other one was a top three, four round pick, depending how big your league is. Yep. Yeah. And Garcia, the one thing I think we talked about him in the past, but it's the only thing for me is really just the platooning. And if he's only 24, so I don't get why the Nationals would want him to not ever see a left-handed pitcher. So looking at the last six games, the Nationals faced two lefties in those six games. And Garcia actually started one of them. He did bat eighth, that lower in the lineup, but that's fine. At least he started one of the two. And then on the year, he only has 74 at-bats versus lefties versus 302 versus righties. But the steals have been awesome. More steals than homers is not something I would have anticipated for Garcia. Like, I knew he had some speed, but I didn't think he'd be five more steals than homers up to this point. And going by the month, June was actually his worst month, so it's good to see him bounce back the way he did in July. He only had a 593 OPS in June. And then he ended up having his highest OPS of a full month in July, which is 948. And the power's doesn't hurt you. It's just the more so the playing time is just the one thing holding him back. If the Nationals would just let him at least hit eighth against lefties every and face them every day, it'd mean a lot more for his value. But and that actually matters, because he only has 44 runs in the year, despite having a 293 average and 328 on base, playing 103 games. So he's basically played most of the year. It's just that not scoring runs. So that kind of holds his fantasy value back a little bit. But yeah, I think it was on the RotoWire pod with Jeff and Scott. They were talking about who he would go ahead in drafts next year. And some names were actually pretty surprising if you haven't really been paying too close attention. Like, he'd probably go ahead of Nico Horner.
Yep.
But it seemed to come down to maybe a top 100 pick for Garcia, potentially. And that would be he's a player where you get a huge value boost if you took him in the 300s. Like, I did a couple spots. Maybe you did too. But yeah, it's one of those picks that really helped your team out.
Oh, yeah. And I've been a Garcia fan in recent years when he got called up. And it's been a playing time and consistency thing from him, and he's getting all of that now, which is great. It'll be interesting, though, on draft day, because like we talked on the show a few weeks ago, Nico Horner, he's a cut. Bryson Stott, you can cut him. Dansby Swanson, you're cutting him. Bo Bichette, you better have cut him by now. Andrés Giménez is a great kind of debate between him and Luis Garcia, because Giménez is still stealing bases, but he's not doing anything. He's worth a cut. I'd take Garcia over pretty much all those guys that we just talked about. But the fun part, Ben, as we know, is, you know, I'm an idiot that's going to start a draft here in 9 days on August 21st with 14 other degenerates that we do. It'll be like our third year, I believe, doing the meatball too early DC draft. So Garcia probably goes a little higher in that one. But if we start drafting, say, in February, when kind of the dust is settled and people start getting, you know, hey, this guy can bounce back, all those kind of conversations that go out there in the fantasy world, now does Garcia fall back again? Because everyone's just like, oh, I think he'll be obviously higher than last year. I think that's obvious. But to the extent where we think he's going now, I think there's going to be a middle ground to that one. And he might still be quite the value when all things are said and done, as you mentioned. All right, Adam Duvall, he's picked up bat speed and gained, but it's 86 WRC plus, not really discussable. Juan Soto is just amazing. Goes from 198 WRC plus to 208. That is insanity. Ty France has gone backwards. I'm really curious to see how August looks, though, because he's played much better the last week or so with the Reds. That'll be fun. I want to hit on Gavin Lux here of the Los Angeles Dodgers. From June to July, he increased his bat speed from 70.12 to 71.63 miles per hour. And his WRC plus went from 69 to 162. We saw the power wake up. We saw the batting average wake up, Ben. Even in August, in a small sample, the power is not there, but he's hitting for even a better average. His WRC plus dropped a bit, but still 127 is very respectable for August. What are you thinking when we see this whole situation with Gavin Lux, you know, former prospect that everyone had high hopes for, didn't really work out. We see a monster July, correlates with the back speed. How are you kind of looking at that one?
Lux is interesting. So I think today, I believe Mookie is returning from his injury.
Yeah, he did. And he got activated. He's in.
Yep. So that's good for the Dodgers. But I think so. The decision to have Mookie play the outfield keeps Lux in the lineup.
Yes,
I believe. And yes, so that's awesome for him. And I remember looking at Lux's preseason projection. And I was just like, I don't really want to draft this guy. He's been hurt. He hasn't shown he can do it. And he kind of started out that way. He only had two homers and three steals through the first 3 months and playing almost pretty regularly. He had 18 games in April, 22 May, 22 June. But something happened in July where he had four homers. So he basically tripled his year-to-date total at that point. Still not stealing a lot of bases. So that's a little upsetting because part of the appeal with Lux, I think, was he was pretty fast, but maybe it's just him. He's worried about hitting right now or whatever. And he's trying to worry about, you know, being a better hitter, and then the steals will come hopefully. So I can see that being a thing. And let's see if he's going to be in a platoon still, which kind of hurts, but for me, Jason Hayward's a big guy this week because of their schedule, but the Dodgers are facing four righties Monday to Thursday this week. So I would play Lux for that. And he's been hitting fourth with the one game. So he's ahead of Will Smith on Fangraphs. So there you go. Another reason to drop Will Smith. He's behind Gavin Lux in the lineup. Who would have thought?
Let me tell you something, though. With Mookie Betts back, Jason Hayward's sitting tonight versus a right-handed pitcher.
Yeah, I was pretty unhappy to take him out of my lineups where I added him. I was pretty excited for that. And I forgot about Kevin Kiermaier because who's taking Hayward's defense spot. They're taking the defense. But, it's also over.
Batting fifth, too. That's pretty
good. Yeah, and then also Miguel Rojas kicked out Jason Hayward, which is also fun. But that's all right. That's a different story. Yeah, and with Lux, it's just let's see if he can stick. So far in August, he's in 321 in nine games. So it seems like whatever happened in July is carrying over so far this month. The OPS isn't there, doesn't have a home run yet, and no steal. So it's kind of empty. But definitely positive for his future outlook. I don't know how good it'll be the rest of the year. It's just it's been a month and a half. Roughly a month and a third, but definitely interesting to see what he can do the rest of the year, and also subsequently how he gets drafted next season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Dodgers do. Mookie Betts comes back, he heads to the outfield. Jason Hayward heads to the bench for now. Obviously, there's probably fluidity to all of that. Ahmed Rosario gets DFA'd, which at one point felt like he was going to be a shortstop, second base type issue. So now you still have Rojas and you have Lux kind of left alone for now. But then Tommy Edmonds expected back, and so is Max Muncy at the start of the next road trip, which I believe is the start of next week. So now you have Enrique Hernandez who's playing third base. Muncy's coming back. And you have Edmund who probably goes to shortstop. Things are going to get real interesting in about a week in LA to see where all the cookies crumble on that. But I think as long as Lux hits, he sticks. But we'll have to kind of see how that one plays out. All right. I want to hit we're going to skip Brandon Marsh, who increased bat speed but deteriorated his WRC plus, but he also had a messed up wrist. So I think that's a lot to do with it. I was going to hit on Orlando Arcia. He's increased from 69.92, which is pretty low, to 71.12, kind of closer to average. But he saw his WRC plus go from 27 to 108 between June and July. Massive jump there. We saw the power increase a little bit. He finished July very strong and carried that over into August. Batting average went through the roof. June was really bad for Arcia. We've seen some improvements, and they've carried it over early into August. If you're looking at Orlando Arcia, you're in a deep league for one, Ben. And secondly, are there any thoughts on Arcia? Because I know I've added him in 15s the last few weeks, and he's paid off pretty nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember him being available in my 15s at some point, too. I never added him just because he's more of a hollow 15 teamer. Doesn't have a steal on the season for the entire season. I said season too many times there. But he doesn't only has 11 homers on the year. And so I went to the Statcast to see if this recent surge has kind of boosted his numbers. And so far, not really. So his ex-WOBA is still third percentile. XBA is 7th percentile. This is for the year to date. His ex-slug is only 12th percentile. And he's very slow based on his sprint speed, 13th percentile. So it's just maybe he's just kind of correcting because he was just so bad to start the year. And I remember I had him on one of my main events last year, Arcia, and I was kind of relying on him just for a good average and solid runs and RBIs. But with the downfall of the Braves lineup, he's kind of been a part of it, and it's kind of hit him pretty hard. He only has 32 runs and 33 RBI in the year, and he's played 112 games, so that's pretty awful. And, I mean, one of the themes right now in fantasy is to ride the hot hand, like you mentioned earlier. So I get adding Arcia because maybe the Braves lineup will wake up and they'll be more of what we thought they were, even without Harris and Acuna, but they still have an Ozzy as well. It's just crazy how many guys they've lost, but Arcia's been there all year and they like his defense, so he'll continue to play the rest of the season. And I would just keep the expectations in check. Like, he could be an average boost if he outperforms what he did the first half of the year and does kind of what he's been doing the last month and a half. And I think that has value.
100%. I'm with you on that. There was a time last year he was a pretty valuable asset to the situation too. So something we can think about there. Michael C. in the chat here. Carroll's bat speed has remained constant, but launch is up 5 degrees since July 1st. Looks like he's got the uppercut back. Batting average is still meh. Yeah, so see, there's a lot of angles to this whole dichotomy we're trying to look at, because I'm just going to go through a few names here. Like Bryson Stott, we talked about him as a drop. He increased his bat speed a little over a mile per hour, got his WRC plus from 77 to 85. It's a boost, but is it still worth it? Plus platooning? No, but it gives us something to look at. Your boy Alex Verdugo, a little positive here. He's increased his bat speed to 69.13, still below average, but his WRC plus came up a bit. We saw Yandy Diaz go the opposite direction. He went up a little over a mile per hour in swing, dropped his WRC plus from 133 to 119. Still good, but dropped it. That's why this is not the end-all, be-all, but there's a few here. Like Jeremy Pena's increased about a mile per hour, and his WRC plus increased a ton. Tyler Stevenson, we saw his go up from 82 to 120 in the WRC plus world. And Ezekiel Tovar went from 86 to 122. I'll let you pick, Ben. Out of those three, Pena, Stevenson, Tovar, who interests you the most, kind of what we've seen here? Because Tovar's been like an up-and-down season, but overall still steady. Stevenson's kind of burst out. He had that big three home run game and whatnot. And then Jeremy Pena, he's another roller coaster guy, similar to Tovar. So how do you look at pick one of the three? It's up to you.
Probably Tovar's, because he's in ahead of the top of the lineup for the Rockies, and also he gets to play however percentage of his games left of the year at Coors. Not sure how the schedule shakes out for the Rockies rest of the way, but I think I had Pena early in the year and I ended up dropping him in my 12 teamers because he's fell off a cliff. He's back to 263 average in July after 213. Actually, it was really just June. So he had 300, 316 in April, Pena 275 May, 213 in June, 263 in July, and then 270 in August. So really just that one June kind of, it's a sore thumb that we ended up highlighting here. But the OPS isn't really there. It's like mid 700s the last 2 months. The only good OPS was really April, that was 805. So yeah, I think I prefer Tovar. I think we talked about Stevenson last week, and yep, it's just like a hot stretch where he'll be a good catcher too. But Tovar and Coors is probably my pick.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. A few more, like Machado, he's increased his by a little, about 8.84 miles per hour, but it dropped. His WRC plus dropped a bit, no biggie. Mark Cotton has increased his WRC plus a bit. Michael Busch is fun because he's increased his bat speed from 70.1 to 70.93. So his WRC plus go from 144 to 120. I say it's a fun one, Ben, because Busch was like crushing everything in May or so, just off the top of my head as I open his page here. And then he went kind of ice cold for at least a month. Maybe it's April when he went nuts. It was April. He went up. May he went cold. But then he woke back up in June, quieted down a bit in July, but still played very well. Now he's hitting again in August. So I just wanted to bring it up for a guy that some people might have got really frustrated with. He's put together quite the season.
Yeah, I didn't have him anywhere, Busch, and I'm surprised at how high his WRC plus was for both months. So he's really having a good year that everyone – so year-to-date, his OPS is 813, which is very good. Decent power, 16 homers. Not the best run in RBI production, but I think he's platoon, so that kind of hurts those totals. Yeah. And but where you were drafting Michael Busch, it was kind of like in that Luis Garcia range, I think, which is like in the 300s, if I had to guess from what it – from my memory. And Busch's been in the lineup. The Cubs liked him. They went out and got him, and they've been playing him as much as they could. So based on how he's performed every month, except for, I think you said, May, I like him as a player going forward the rest of the year. And it'd be cool to see where he gets drafted next year as a platoon and heavy, strong side platoon bat. Those are always tricky to gauge the market on.
Most definitely. Since Michael's in the chat, I noticed a player he's mentioned before. Hunter Renfroe is a fun one. His bat speed went from 74.93 in June to 75.74. He saw his WRC plus go from 196 in June to a still very respectable 142 in July. And I just wanted to highlight this because Renfroe was injured off and on throughout the year. He had that kind of freakish toe-ish injury, I think it was, early in the season. Horrible May. But, man, June and July, he has mashed the baseball. Quieted down a bit in August in a small sample, but – I just want to highlight the June and July if you have anything else on Hunter Renfroe.
I had Renfroe in a DC or two, and I started playing him because I think I was kind of relying on him for power early on in the year, and he wasn't doing anything like you mentioned with the sub-200 average in April and then 208 in May, and just only two homers in both months. And he was playing basically full-time, 25 games in April, 24 in May. But, yeah, the last 2 months, looking at June and July, were both awesome for Renfroe. And, yeah, hopefully he keeps it up because power's hard to come by, and especially in the DC where you're stuck with who you have. So hopefully he continues what he was doing those last couple of months.
All right. Just for fun now, I'm going to flip to the opposite side of this, Ben, and look at the biggest decreasers in bat speed. Like Ahmed Rosario leads the way. He's a 300 hitter, not a ton of power. But MJ Melendez is a guy that I just always have trouble quitting. I do understand the power's not there. And even lately, he's not even hitting for a lot of barrels or hard hit rate. That's deteriorated quite a bit with MJ Melendez. But when we look at his numbers, June, 73.5 bat speed to 71.94 in July. But his WRC plus went from 87 to 113. So he saw a very good improvement in that, even though his bat speed decreased, which for a guy that maybe swings out of the zone or this, that, and the other, that could be a good thing potentially to slow things down. And we saw that the power was there in June and July combined, but the batting average, 235 in July was a big mark for him. But he's hitting 412 in August, I'll say that much. So thoughts on MJ Melendez, who kind of proves the opposite side of the spectrum for what we've been looking at?
Yeah, so it kind of – my point kind of goes to my hypothesis about Kwan and Arias being the inverse correlation with average and bat speed. And that's because in July, Melendez only struck out 9 times in 51 at-bats versus 21 times in 69 at-bats in June. So he had 12 fewer Ks and only 18 fewer at-bats. Plate appearances probably even more than that, but that's a pretty good decrease in the number of Ks. And that makes sense to me. If the bat speed's going down, trying to get a little more control because he was just hitting so poorly in the first 3 months. That's why he was getting dropped in 15s. I was able to add Melendez in the main event. I started him this week. Hopefully he does well, but yeah, it's like I'm not relying on a big average, of course, but it's just the power. That's what he should provide. He doesn't get the plate appearance like he used to when he was batting leadoff for that year or two stretch. But it's good to see him making what I'm assuming is an adjustment to swing less hard and try to make more contact, and it seems to have paid off over those last 2 months.
Yeah, this is kind of why when we started this conversation, it's like, what's it going to correlate best with? I think there's probably, you need a multiple, like you need something to do with plate discipline, something to do with like X velocity barrels. Like I think there's a few different things, and it kind of all maybe like a rolling graph of this there. Some, there's gotta be something that kind of go, you know what I'm trying to say? This is why you are the smart one. And I just kind of give the ideas. There's gotta be like, it's not just one factor. I think that this is not going to equal this. I think there's going to be a kind of a combination of different inputs that are going to give us what we're looking for of like for a final rating number, like Ben's magic, whatever you want to call it. I'm just making up stuff, but you know, people come like, you know, pitcherless has PLV plus, like to make PLV plus, there's a lot of inputs into that. And this is where I think bat speed might fit better in a formula like that than per se. It's like, hey, what's it going to, is it going to mean this person's WRC plus barrel, whatever. I think there's more to it is what I'm trying to get at. And this is these are the examples that kind of weigh it out. But again, very novice like approach, very new to all of us. That's why I want to hit up Jorge Polanco. He went from a 71.5 bat speed in June down to 69.95, but we saw his WRC plus go from 32 to 123. He did have all the home runs in July, hit for average. Things have gotten back down to normal as he's banged up. So we'll see how that goes, but still been a fantasy producer in July and August. So what's your thoughts on this? Because he basically slowed everything down and all the production has followed.
Right. I think he must have gotten hurt in June because he only had five games. So kind of like what we saw with Wilson Contreras earlier. Because in July, he bounced back really well, as what we have here is saying. And he had five home runs, Polanco, a 787 OPS for the month, which was his highest OPS for any month so far this year, which is kind of a disappointment for Polanco. I mean, you'd hope for a little bit higher month here or there for him based on his track record, but like also part of his track record is getting injured, and that's what happened again this year. But yeah, I think I added Polanco in my 12-teamer just because middle infield was kind of sparse, and he has third base eligibility as well. So that's useful, at least in Yahoo he does. But yeah, hopefully the Mariners kind of pick it up, because I know they had a few games where they really broke out for 8-10 runs in the last couple of weeks, and now they have J-Rod back, and they really need the offense to click, and Polanco's going to be a big part of that if they want to make it into the playoffs. At least they'll probably make the playoffs, but at least have a good run. And Polanco's a big part. I mean, he was projected to be their three hitter, and with the way he was playing early in the year, he was not a three hitter for sure. But the 787 OPS, that plays up as a three hitter, especially in that lineup, which is kind of weak. So if he can stay healthy, he'll be definitely startable the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, I've been interested in him. That's what this chart, if anything, it tells me, like, look at the bottom of the board and you might find some sleeper, fantasy candidates that they might be getting overlooked here because they don't do something really well, but they have other aspects that are kind of intriguing. A lot of it's injured too. Like Melendez is on the IL, Polanco on the IL, Bichette has been the IL, Fraley has been on the IL, Bellinger on the IL. This guy has not been on the IL though. Alec Bohm, it's been a conundrum to myself and many people for a long time, but he saw his bat speed go from 72.87 in June to 71.72 in July. Saw his WRC plus go from 122 to 125. So essentially stayed the same, which is quite interesting. And if you look at his numbers in June, he hit 284, July at 278. But he had five homers in June and one homer in July. So the power disappeared. What's your takes on Bohm? Because I think we've talked about him plenty on this show. I pretty much ask anybody I can about him because he is the ultimate conundrum to me. Hits in the middle of one of the best lineups in baseball. So he drives in a ton of runs. That's always been his fantasy goodness. Hits for a good average, but like just no power to be said. So it's one of those, if the RBIs aren't there, it's big trouble when it comes to Bohm. So what are your thoughts when you see this?
I want to say this is like the fourth time we've talked about him We talked after his great April, then after the poor May, then after the weird July, and now again. It's been, like you said, a roller coaster. And in July, so let me orient myself. So in July, Bohm had the better WRC plus slightly, but he took a lot off of the bat speed. Yeah, so the slower bat speed seems to have taken away some of the power, because he only had one homer in July versus five in June. I think you said that. And he's one of the guys where you just leave him in your lineup in April or March, and then you take it, and then when the season's done, you see what he has. I don't think you want to try to play matchups with Bohm, because like you said, the lineup's so good that he's in, and he's a great average asset for your fantasy team. And he already, like, he has the 80 RBI, 52 runs, a little low on the runs, but, and power's not really there. But so I don't know. Next year will be interesting to see what happens if he drops or increases his ADP. But I'm sure the projections will still like him because of probably, I'm sure he has good quality contact metrics when the average is so high. He doesn't strike out a lot, but it's just weird seeing the dip in the miles per hour of the bat speed, but there's not really a change in the WRC plus. And that and that's what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, how they don't really correlate all that well, but sometimes they correlate with each other for certain cases, but as a whole, it's not too reliable. But, and I guess Bohm's an example of that.
Yep. It's a very interesting one. Another fun example is our buddy Zach Neto. Went from a 70.8 to a 69.69. Very nice bat speed in July. But we saw the WRC plus go from 114 to 119. So we got an increase. And if you're not living under a rock, you've noticed, you know, five homers in June, two in July. He's even got four in August. Guy runs like crazy. He's hitting for average. That's improved from June to July. It could be partly health related, but he seems to have played in, you know, 26 games, 24 games. He's pretty much the same amount of games. What's your thoughts here on Zach Neto? Because he did have the elbow issue that kind of kept him out a game or two. So maybe he had to play through that for a little bit. But the batting average has dropped. Production's gone through the roof.
So I will say, I admit my L on Ellie De La Cruz the other day on Twitter. I will admit my L on Zach Neto because I did not want any part of him where he was going in drafts. I didn't trust, because he was so young when he got called up and he didn't really show to me that much with the underlying profile. But at the same time, he is young. It's just one of those leap of faith, I think, where you have to try to predict that growth. And who knows how it's going to happen for each individual player. But I believe it was the CBS podcast. They were talking about Neto, and I just want to confirm this, but I think he's a top 40 player or hitter. I have the Razzball player rater up. So he is 45th overall on the Razzball player rater for 15 team leagues.
That's outstanding stuff.
And that's because he has 17 homers and 21 RBI.
Oh, yeah, he's a 2020 guy.
Yep, he could go. I mean, if he starts running in August, he could go like 2030 potentially, or get close to it with the average that's helping you, 264 average on the year. And I think the one thing that the detractors are saying, whether it's on Twitter or other podcasts about Neto, is the run production. But you have to remember, he was hitting eighth or ninth for the Angels all year when he probably shouldn't have been. Maybe at the start of the year because he's still young, just give him some time to get his feet underneath him. And I actually benefited because I think it was my OLAC. He was dropped and I ended up fabbing him. And he's been in my lineup ever since I added him. And so it's been a great, those are the ads in fab that you really want to make, is when people drop more highly rated players and then just take them for cheap. And like with look at Hunter Renfrow, like he wasn't going as high as Neto was, but he was very, very productive those last 2 months. And he was an awful start of the year. It's just, it is a market, like buying low, selling high, those type of things. But yeah, so is it be interesting to see where he bats next year, Neto, because Trout would be back. Maybe Renhifo's still there if they don't trade him the offseason, but he deserves to be at the top of the lineup next year, and at least for the rest of this year as well. And that'll help him down the stretch to be maybe creeping into the top 40, at least according to Razzball. It depends on where you get your player rater from, but he's been a huge huge win this year for drafters.
Yep, most definitely. He's been a doozy. I just want to mention a few names. We don't have to break them down just for listeners' sake. Then we'll talk some fab here in a second. But it's kind of interesting looking at the bottom side of this, because like Josh Bell has gone nuts and he's dropped like 0.89 miles per hour between June and July. George Springer has dropped 0.84 and he's gone from a 97 to 139 WRC plus. We see Eugenio Suarez has dropped 0.71 miles per hour. He's gone from a 69 to a 205 WRC plus. So my point is a lot of the opposite side of things. But then you got Jackson Merrill, minus 0.7 drop in miles per hour. It goes from a 180 to a 92 WRC plus. Obviously, in August, it's probably a 3,000 WRC plus. So all he does is home runs. But you get my point here. It's just fun. I'm just driving this home before we head on onto the next topic here. Is there's a lot of gainers in speed. There's a lot of decreasers in speed. But we're seeing all wonkiness with the WRC plus, like you said, out the gate before we even started this discussion. And I just wanted to bring it home one more time. I know we've mentioned it a lot, but what these charts are good for, no matter what the subject matter is good for talking points, because you can kind of, it makes you want to look at players more So even if we agree that WRC plus might not be the best metric for now with this, at least it's interesting to see, like, okay, it makes sense for these guys that swung faster, got the improvement, but why'd this guy decrease? And then vice versa. If this guy's bat speed went down, these guys are all increasing, but then you got Jackson Merrill. Like, what happened here? Or something like that. Like, you get these kind of standouts that make you want to look into a player more, and maybe that gets you into a rabbit hole that makes you add, drop, something. Who knows? So any final thoughts on this bat speed stuff before we start talking some week 21 fab?
I found it very interesting. Hopefully the listeners did too. It sounds like you definitely liked it. And
I love it. It's very, it's new, and there's so many endless, like, I've been doing this for over a decade now. So I get something new that I can at least wrap my head around, and there's so many ways to go with it still. And I'm lucky to be associated with people like you and others that are smart enough to take these visions and play with them. So and you have your own visions too, which is great. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it all kind of comes together.
Yeah, it won't be the last time the listeners hear about Badcast on Bench with Bubba, I'm sure.
Oh, no, especially in the off season when I'm still drafting and Ben's not even trying to prep yet. Like, it'll be fun. it'll be an easy way to go some other direction on something like that. So it'll be a ton of fun. But, yeah, we'll dig into that more and see where it goes, because I think the sky's the limit with trying to decipher what to really take away from all this kind of stuff. All right, Ben, if you are ready, let's get to recapping some week 21 fab for any new listeners out there. We recap the NFBC Online Championship 12-team leagues, because most people play anywhere from 10 to 15-team leagues. We kind of meet in the middle here, and we use NFBC because, hey, it's just easy to figure out who was the popular ad drops. And Ben, the most added player this week in 222 leagues, as he should have been. Max 168, low of a dollar, of course. Ryan Walker, the new closer for the San Francisco Giants. The surprise move on Friday when Camilo Duvall gets sent to AAA at about 4:45 Pacific time. So I literally just sat down at this Mexican restaurant with my daughter, and the beer just showed up, and I got the alert on my phone, and I literally have just look around, like, what's going on here? And so I remember very clearly where this took place. But Ryan Walker, very qualified reliever. I loved him in his role he had, because he gets you wins, good ratios, but he already locked down his first save. Very talented. I thought Hicks deserved a look, but it's Ryan Walker for now. So any thoughts on this one?
How long do you think the Vols going to be down in the minors?
That's a fun one, because I think I did drop him in a league this past week, because the more I read about it, it's not just, well, his first appearance in the minors, gets two strikeouts. He's one strike away from getting out of the inning, and then it's like walk, triple, like there's a lot going on between the years, and that's part of the problem. Is apparently this is the second straight manager that's had an issue with him, and Bob Melvin put his foot down where Gabe Kapler did not. And so I have a feeling if the team keeps winning, because they are winning since the All-Star break, that Duvall might just kind of be that guy that they'll use an excuse that he's not good for the clubhouse and you're going to stay away for a little bit. So he's young, so this could be a quote-unquote teaching moment. I don't know how I would have left him up personally, but I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So I think he might be down until at least September, at least.
Okay, yeah. And so Walker definitely has closers type stuff. So he has a 2.2 ERA in the year, and the underlying metrics all support that. He's a 3x ERA, a 2.96 xFIP. The FIP's 2.72. His Sierra is way down the page, 2.59. So that's also very good as well. His K minus walk percentage on the year is 24.8%, which is very good. That's a 30% K rate. So he has closer stuff, and it explains why he was the top ad. If I was in the market again for a closer, or at least, well, that one team could definitely use a little more stable source of saves. But if I had the money that I didn't use on Fauché, oh well, can't predict the future. I would have used it towards Walker myself, but I didn't have the money or the dire need to get saves. But I think that's a very fair price if you have the money to spend.
Yeah, if you needed saves, I get it. Like, there's a perfect world where he's there the rest of the year and Duvall is just on timeout, or he comes back and doesn't pitch the ninth. That's an option. I still think Duvall's still so good. Like, he's an all-star, 20-something saves. It's crazy, but hey, you never know. We'll see how it plays out. The second most added player is another possible closer, and Justin Martinez of the D-backs. He's been discussed on some of my recent content, and I didn't get him this week because I got some other potential closers in the mix here. But I like what we got here. He got picked up in 178 leagues, as high as 118, as low as a dollar. Martinez picked up a win in his last outing and saves in his previous two. So his last three outings, very productive for fantasy managers. You don't get any of those, though, if you picked him up this weekend, unfortunately. But it's a guy that's always got some lights out, strikeout stuff. Command's kind of been the issue. But Thompson was not the answer, as people thought he was. Sewald's out of there. Puck's high leverage. Looks like Martinez might get his crack out of here.
Yeah, he definitely had closer usage last week. So he's very similar, at least according to estimators, as Ryan Walker. But the big difference, though, is how he's getting to those estimators. Justin Lawrence does not have as good of a K rate as Ryan Walker, and his walk rate is also worse. But he has I didn't look at Walker's ground ball rate, but Lawrence's or Martinez. I confuse Justin Lawrence, Justin Martinez in my head sometimes. So excuse me if I misspeak, but Martinez, he has a 64.5% ground ball rate on the year. So that's really helping his numbers be as good as they are. So he's getting away with the walks by, I'm assuming, getting double plays and just keeping the ball out of the ballpark. So that's how he's benefiting. I think I mentioned him before as a potential I think I added Martinez for the short week after the All-Star break, because I remember watching him late night on MLB Network and seeing how filthy he was. I'm like, this guy is nasty. I don't know how people can hit him. But so he definitely has closer stuff. It's just a matter of if the Diamondbacks want Sewald to get the job back. I think Sewald pitched the ninth in one of the recent wins when it wasn't a safe situation, because as a puck manager, I was trying to look at it, see how his usage was. I was looking at the back of the bullpen with the Diamondbacks to see how they're all being used. And for now, it looks like Martinez, but I had him behind Walker because I didn't know if he actually would be the closer going forward. But I get speculating on him if you're desperate for saves or if you need a boost like some teams may need. But I think the order that OC players had him in is the way it's also how I had them prioritized in Fab.
Most definitely. The third most added player is Tyler Molle. Returned to the bigs last week after missing a lot of time with the injury. Was picked up and he went 5 innings, 1 run, 2 Ks, which was good. 158 leagues, as high as $49, as low as a buck. That doesn't bother me. I saw some crazy main event prices out there, but I guess pitching's even harder in main events, so that makes sense. But he's gone through 3 innings, no runs, 4 Ks against the Red Sox so far. It's a good Red Sox offense. He had a 2-step this week. That also gets people kind of excited there. I like Tyler Molle. I just wasn't going to be super aggressive on him, especially for some of the other pitchers I put some cheaper bids in on. But what was your thoughts on Tyler Molle?
Same thing as what I was saying about guys like Jeffrey Springs and Robbie Ray. It's coming back from the injury. How's the control going to be? Molle only had, I think it was, two strikeouts in that first game back. But it's the first game back. But still, like I said with Springs, got to give these guys some slack, but you also need them performing if you're going to add them. And I think, especially in the main event too, it was the 2-start week that really jacked up the price. But 49 in the OC is pretty reasonable. I mean, also, like, Molle, yeah, he was a draftable player when he was healthy, but he still wasn't that good. I mean, like, he had some good years, but he had strikeout upside for sure. Like, he had 210 in 2021, but he's typically been a higher threes ERA pitcher, even higher a couple years in the fours, one in the five. So he's good, but he's not great. And I think people just saw a name that they knew. And like you said, the pitching's hard to come by right now with everyone being hurt and the random minor leaguers getting called up. So it's good to have a little comfort when Tyler Molle's on your lineup. But yeah, I didn't go too crazy. I don't even know if I bid on Molle. I was just like, I'll let other people pay more than I would have paid anyway. But yeah, so far off to a good start this week, but it was a tough 2-step matchup with the Red Sox and the Twins. So also why I kind of stood away.
Yep, the matchups are very tricky. Like I said, I like Molle. He was down by waterfalls. When we get to we'll talking about who I did pick up starting pitching, and we'll see if that was the right move or not. But I was not going to break the bank. I don't have money to break the bank in any of my main leagues right now. So I was like, for the most part, relatively cheap, it felt like. So yeah, they just weren't on my agenda. The next most added player, Paul Blackburn. I loved Paul Blackburn. I figured I could get him cheaper than Molle. Picked up in 157 leagues, as high as 48, as low as a dollar. So that may or may not have been the case, depending on my league. But Blackburn's made 2 starts with the Mets since he was traded. But he's made 3 starts since coming back from the IL, but 2 with the Mets. We saw 6 innings in both starts. We saw 1 run in both starts. We saw 5 or 6 Ks in both starts. He's been very, very effective. And then he has a awesome two-step this week. It's like Oakland and Pittsburgh or something off the top of my head. Outstanding two-step. So, and I like him as just like a JP Sears type. You can stream him or a bench streamer where he's going to give you more good starts than not. And again, with pitching as bad as it is, I'd rather go get a guy like that where I'm like, okay, he's going to stay on my roster and we're going to make this work throughout the year. So I liked Paul Blackburn. I don't think I got him as many places as I like. A lot of people like Paul Blackburn. What's your thought on him?
Same here. He went the week before in the main events. So I think he was added as he was coming back from injury. So I wasn't on him that week. And I think I just didn't bid enough on Blackburn because I didn't know. I don't know. Like, he's a good pitcher. So he's a DC darling. So I have him in two of my DCs and I was very happy to put him in my lineup this week for that two step. It was like the Marlins and Oakland. Yeah. Oakland first and then Miami. So Oakland's a little tricky, but it's still the A's. They're bound to cool down from how well they've been hitting. But and Alexi's home too, so that's still a good park to pitch in city. And yeah, I like Blackburn. Like I said, he's always a target in DCs because, well, he used to be on the A's and people didn't think he had good run support, but he's a solid pitcher in the right spots and makes sense. And also, I think he was so highly added because of the two-step in the OCs as well. Like, he's not really an OC pitcher, but with what's out there and these matchups, it explains why he was added so widely.
Yep, 100% agree with you there. Next player to talk about here, Jake McCarthy of the D-backs, picked up in 107 leagues, as high as 52, as low as a dollar. I mentioned at the top of the show I was more aggressive in hitting than pitching. McCarthy is one of my top targets, and we will talk about him a lot more on my ad drops. But since the All-Star break, dude's hitting .385 with three homers, 15 RBIs, 11 runs, and three stolen bases. He's hitting almost .450 or almost .500 over like last week. He's just mashing everything, and he's not even platooning that much anymore, which is great to see. So I was a big fan of a guy like Jake McCarthy, who there's a lot of people to stream from week to week right now, but McCarthy feels like he could be beneficiary for the rest of the season type player, which there wasn't a lot of that. So what's your thoughts on Jake McCarthy?
I wish Alec Thomas never came back because I dropped McCarthy when Alex Thomas came back, and now I don't have Jake McCarthy anymore. It's very annoying. I think Curlin did the same thing because we were talking about McCarthy because we both had him in our main events and talking about when to drop him, when not to drop him because, well, also too. So when Thomas came back, McCarthy was on the short side platoon as a lefty. He was batting, only facing lefties. And I think I heard that year to date, he has better numbers versus lefties. So it makes sense why they would do that. It's just interesting as a left-handed hitter, you don't normally see that. But now, yeah, so McCarthy's playing over lefties over Carroll or against lefties over Carroll, which is saying a lot. And, I still don't think McCarthy's stealing all that much, which is kind of upsetting because that's where he made his name a couple years ago. But I mean, you'll take the average, and then I think he had like a 5-hit game and a couple homers and another game or whatever. So he's really hitting well. It's just hopefully the role stays because, like I said, from firsthand experience, he's not reliably used. At least he hasn't been, but lately he's playing every day. So hopefully that playing time sticks. And, if the Lourdes Gurriel injury is anything serious, because he's out with a hamstring, like you mentioned earlier in the show, then McCarthy's PT should be pretty safe. And yep, definitely one of those guys you just add when he's hot, and hopefully you hold on until he cools off and go from there.
Exactly. Alex Call, the next most added player. Uncle Ted's talking about him in the chat already. Picked up in 96 leagues, as high as 39, as low as a buck. He's a fun one. Like, I actually have him in DCs because it's just so hot and cold, but when he gets going, it's great. And right now, over his last six games since August 6th, multiple hits in all six games, six runs scored, one steal, .464. You're just not going to get a lot of power with Alex Call, but the speed's there, and he's not going to for this kind of batting average, but, you know, 280 to 300 is in play potentially. So I wasn't all in on Call. Like I said, I wanted McCarthy and a couple other guys, but what's your thoughts on Alex Call?
I didn't even have on any of my lists, which I don't know, like for some reason, he never really stood out to me when I was doing my fab. Maybe he was already added. That's also a possibility as well, knowing how 15s are. But yeah, so I thought he was fast. Who am I mixing him up with on the Nationals? Who has a ton of steals?
He got sent back to the minors, I believe. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's going to bug me now. I will look it up.
I can't think of who it was, but I thought this is who Al Call was. And yeah, he doesn't have much speed. He only has four steals on the year. But I mean, he hasn't really played that much. His year-to-date average actually .419, though, so that's pretty funny. I don't know. Like, I think it's just a hot streak. He's a righty. He is playing full time though. I think in the past when he got called up, he was on the short side. but the Nationals, they don't really have anyone else right now. So, and he's hitting at the top of the lineup. He was hitting first when Abrams was out, and also hitting second when he was there. So the spot's very good. And I get it, like, but also he's a great example of someone who's hitting very well. That's why he's getting added. But when you, once you add him, what's his average going to be for you? Because he hit 571 last week or 2 weeks ago, 406 last week. So now he's probably going to hit like 150 for 2 weeks, and then he's going to tank your average some. But so that's probably why I probably wouldn't have been in on him if I could have added him. But
yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of my thing. Jacob Young, so you're thinking about his 27 steals on the season.
That's... Yeah, I knew someone was very fast.
Yeah, no, I'm with you too. I was like, I know his name is going to bug me, and there it is. All right, let's talk catchers, because that's what we do on Bench with Bubba. Joey Bart picked up in 94 leagues, as high as 67, as low as a buck. I know I added him in a handful of leagues this week, not for that price tag, much, much cheaper. But since July 30th, he has played in 10 games, hit safely in 9 of 10 games, 375, 4 home runs. He was very productive before he got hurt. It's been outstanding for Joey Bart, and I was pumping him up as a catcher too. Got to pick up this weekend. I put my money where my mouth was. I don't expect him to be this good. I'm not clueless, but I think he's going to be very serviceable as a catcher too. So I like this ad quite a bit.
It's got to sting a little bit too, doesn't it?
Yes. Trust me. Yeah. I wanted him to be so good for so long, and it just did not work.
Yeah, he was always injured, right, on the Giants? Or like
he got hurt a lot. He never got it going. Just never got it going.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But so his Statcast, he doesn't qualify because Bart doesn't really play that much this year. But he has a decent amount of red. He's an X-Slug of 466, which is probably 75th percentile if he qualified. His barrel rate's roughly the same percentile. So he's definitely – the underlying numbers definitely support what he's been doing. And I think Bart, either he was held on to when he first got added that one time, or I was just late to the party because catcher's weird with me. Like I don't know. I feel like I hold my catcher too sometimes if it's not too reliable otherwise. But on the year, Bart's in 273, 10 homers and 154 at bats. So that's a great power pace, and the underlying stats I talked about in Savant kind of support that. And he's kind of like with Stevenson, might as well add him while he's hot and see how long it lasts.
Yeah, I've been doing that with a bunch of my catcher twos. I've talked about it quite a bit, like Travis Darnold. I keep just going up and down Higashioka. Austin Wells has stuck, though. He's been pretty good.
I got him a couple spots, and that's part of the reason why I haven't been too active for catchers.
Yeah, so he's not going anywhere. But like Uncle Ted, that chose Adrian Del Castillo. I love the kid from Arizona. He was playing every other game that was getting annoying, but he's in the lineup on Monday. That's back-to-back games for the first time. He's hit great. He's got hits in all three games he's played. He's got a home run, walk-off homer. He was only added in I just saw it here a second ago, in 52 leagues for as high as $40. So I have a feeling we'll be talking about him next week as probably one of the most added players on OCs if he starts playing every day. And heck, I might, you know, if Bart slumps, I'll just keep playing that game. So I have no shame in that. But I love Del Castillo. I was just like sitting there going, he's got to play, dude. He's got to play. 15s every other game is fine. 12s, I need a little more if I can find. Like, Bart plays pretty much every day. So that goes a long ways in those counting stats. But I love Del Castillo. So, yeah, good call on that one. Ted, Lucas Irsig was
I will say, though, with Castillo. So I did look at him because I wanted to replace one of my catchers in one spot. I saw what you're talking about with the every other game thing. And then I also – so one thing that MFBC does, which is unique and I also like, is they show how many outs players have per game as well. Del Castillo's outs matches his Ks for every game so far. So I think he has 1,000 BABIP. So I figure, okay, well, there's the hot start and how much are people going to overpay for it. So I wasn't on Castillo, but I saw those two factors. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll tone it down a little bit because he's off to a great start, but how realistic is this going to be?
That is a good point. Very, very good point. Next up here, Lucas Irsig picked up in 91 leagues, as high as 75, as low as a dollar. Picked up a save recently. Hunter Harvey's a little banged up / struggling. MacArthur's not doing great. So it looks like Irsig could get some run here. Were you interested in Lucas?
I think what I said for Walker and Lawrence applies, but I think people also held on to Irsig as well because it was still kind of unsettled before Harvey got hurt. But I get adding him. I'm surprised he wasn't higher on the list with the other guys. But because I feel like, well, he's the next reliever down. It's just the number of leagues is a little bit different, but yeah, I get adding Irsig as a spec play for saves.
Spencer Arrighetti was added in 73 leagues, as high as 118, as low as a buck. Erod was added in 71 leagues as high as 61, as low as a dollar. Ryan Nelson was added in 70 leagues as high as 53, as low as a dollar. So all kind of in the same bubble. Arrigetti leading the world in strikeouts over the last month. Erod returned from the IL, made two starts. Not horrible, but you can tell there's a lot of rust still going on there. Ryan Nelson's been a lot better of late. How do you look at those three guys?
So I actually pulled up Nelson's page real quick, and the note from 6:02 tonight on Monday says he could be shifted to the bullpen, Nelson.
Oh, which, Jesus.
And I did have Nelson starting in one of my, at least on a team or two, because that's really annoying. Yeah, oh well. They're saying he's going to be out of the bullpen on Wednesday's game behind Montgomery in case it's an abbreviated start, so that's great.
Wow.
Yeah, but Erod, kind of the same thing with the other injured guys. What's he going to be like? He had two walks, only one strikeout first game back. And I remember going when it was you and Toby, how you guys always debate Erod about the whip and all that stuff.
Yep,
I felt like I was caught in the middle between. I get what they're both saying. He's a tough one, Erod. Yep. In my 15s, he had been drafted, and then he was added way ahead of time, so I couldn't have added Erod this week. And then Arrigetti, he's 129 strikeouts in 105 innings in the year, which is awesome. I think that's why he's been a big fab pickup. On the downside, though, 50 walks in those 105 innings. So a little Hayden Birdsong-ish, where it's a lot of Ks, a lot of walks. So what's going to happen start to start? But also, too, last two starts, he had 25 Ks, three walks against Tampa Bay and Boston. Tampa, not so impressive. Boston, very impressive. So I get that's why he was the add. And also playing for the Astros, good win potential. It's like one of those up and down rookies. Like that's how you're saying. I remember with Birdsong, it's going to be a rocky bump or a bumpy ride. And that's definitely been what's the case for Arrigetti so far this year.
Yep, that's just what they do. So you got to take the good with the bad or stay away is the best way I can. Like when people hit me up and go, when do I drop them? I'm like, if you drop them now, you're not going to get them back. So it's up to you to kind of figure out how you want to see that one. Uncle Ted mentions Jer Encarnacion. I agree. I love him, and he's playing every day. I've heard some people say he platoons. He does not. He's played 9 to 10 games since he got recalled, either in the outfield or DH, lefties, righties, does not matter. I don't see how that changes with the way the Giants are laid out. Hits the ball extremely hard. There's more power there than has shown up. So deeper formats, and he's sneaking into 12s as well. Like I've had some bids in on him. Didn't go crazy. There's a lot of middling guys here, like Nick Martinez is popular, coming off a two-step. Joe Musgrove's returning. Merrill Kelly just returned. So some injured guys, as you mentioned. Parker Meadows, I think that's the kind of final adds, as should have been picked up already. Max Muncy got picked up in 51 leagues. He's expected back in a week. I'm not going to go through all of these because we're starting to get into the whole, these guys are just kind of left lying around in the dust. So if you're ready, let's recap our fab from the week.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
The other name, though, I pulled up, though, is Sir Anthony Dominguez. I wasn't sure what you thought about that situation in Baltimore.
That is a very interesting one because, as you know, Kimbrel's turning into quite the mess, is the nice way I'll say it. And then you got Yainer Cano has not been the Yainer we've remembered from a few years ago. And I said it when Sir Anthony got traded, and Bloomfield laughed at me. And I said, hey, they need back into the bullpen. He's got experience. And I got laughed at all. There's a chance he rocks into that thing. So I don't think it's going to be 100% his deal, but he's got a shot. I think he's got a shot. But as long as Kimbrel's got a pulse, he's going to find his way back there at least once a week, it feels like. Because I think they want him to figure it out. But it's just they can't have him there full time right now.
Yep.
It's tough.
It's a tricky situation with all those guys still there.
Yep, most definitely. All right, what do you got for us this week in your 15-teamers?
Okay, yeah, I don't think it's as crazy as last week. Also, a lot less money now, but here we go. So main one, I added Miles Michaelis, dropped Luis Garcia, the reliever, for $1, no backup. And then I spec'd on Reese Olson, dropped John Brebbia, $1, no backup. So this league has like $34 left, so I'm already on dollar days, which is fine. But made my moves there, and I can't complain. So main two, I added Albert Suarez, dropped Luis Renjifo, $14, $5 backup. I'm surprised that Suarez didn't come up, but I think he's more of a 15-team play, though.
Yeah, he's more 15.
And then here's my first Jason Hayward ad. I added Jason Hayward, dropped Will Benson, who was just as big of a bust because he barely played last week, $3, $2 backup. So trash for trash. main three, added Suarez again, $8, $5 backup. This time I dropped Tommy Pham. Yeah, so I dropped Pham, and we alluded to the Cardinal situation. I don't know. He sat two games against righties, and then he's batting third tonight. But I don't know. I kept Pham, I believe, over Luke Raley. I don't know, but I didn't need a starter for the week, so that's why I added a starter for a hitter. But I don't know. What do you think about dropping Pham?
I've dropped him a lot of places before this, like when he was still in Chicago. It feels like it's a strict platoon, so if it's a week where there's not a lot of lefties, he's doing you no good. So I have no problem dropping Pham, and if anything, play the weekly matchups with him. I wouldn't be rostering him, especially in deeper formats right now.
He was getting PT, but only like one homer, if that, per week. He was okay.
I think there's other guys to spec on, I think, and see where he can go.
Yeah, he wasn't doing all that well, so I'm not too worried about dropping him there. Yeah, so that was Suarez for Pham. Then I added Jason Hayward, dropped Will Benson again, $2, no backup. And then last two ads for this team were Bailey Falter. I dropped Randy Vasquez, $1, no backup. Added Mark Leiter Jr., dropped Griffin Canning, $1, no backup. And then my Olak, again, added Albert Suarez. This time I dropped Andre Pallante, $18, $6 runner-up. Then I added Taiwan Walker for his two-step, more of a 15-team play since he wasn't near the top in 12s. I dropped Griffin Canning, $12, $2 backup. This is 3 for 4. I added Jason Hayward again. This is where I dropped Luke Raley. $4, no backup. Hopefully I got Hayward out of all those lineups. I know I got him at least one. Yeah, that was it.
All righty. For my 15s, let me update something real quick. I'll start with my Olak. And I didn't go aggressive, but maybe it's too aggressive. DL Hall, I liked what we saw. And some people are worried about innings with him, and maybe, but in rehab, he was stretched out to at least a 5-inning guy, if not more, before he kept getting hurt. So I think we'll get there. We saw him go like 4 2/3 or something, or whatever. He got 7 Ks. Like, he looked pretty good in his debut. So I got him for 16, no runner-up bid, dropped Heston Kjerstad. And then I was really aggressive, especially in 15s, with the Reds playing a full week in Great American. I added Ty France pretty much everywhere. Over his last 7 games, he sits safely in 5 of 7 for .333 average with 2 home runs and a 15% strikeout rate. So I had Ty France, dropped Alec Marsh 13-2. Marsh obviously in AAA. But I liked France for at least a stream, maybe more, depending on what we get from him, because the last 7 games are all on the road and he was very productive. So took my chances there. In Listener League 1, got Joey Bart, dropped Kyber Ruiz, who's playing good, but I need power. So we went with Joey Bart. 5-4, runner up of 4, so that felt nice. And then I went back to the well just for cheap because there was nothing else. Like, I don't have a ton of money here. So I got Max Scherzer, dropped the reliever, Luis Garcia, 3-0, no runner up. It's a back injury. There's no set timetable yet, but I'll take a chance on a $3 Max Scherzer. I can get him back for like a month. Well, I'll play that game where for the cheap. And then Auction League 2, Ty France, dropped Braxton Garrett 6-6. So that was the not good win, Ben. And then yep. I got DL Hall. This one stings. I dropped Yu Darvish 6, runner-up 0. Apparently Yu Darvish threw a live bullpen, like batting practice on Sunday. That went unreported until today, because all initial reports looked like Yu Darvish was pretty much gone for the year, handling some personal stuff. Now it feels like we might see him back in a couple. Like, it still might be September because he might need some rehab and everything, but we might see Yu Darvish back. So that one did not leave me all warm and fuzzy, to say the least. All right. What do you got for Yahoo as you're selling stay with things?
I did not do any more trades. I'll stay with Darvish, though. Like, he's kind of near the end of the line anyway, so who knows how he'll come back. So, I mean, I wouldn't kick yourself too hard over that one.
Yeah, it was just more like that news would have been good like Sunday when he actually threw the bullpen than today.
So. Yeah, a little less impactful for me, though, is the same thing with Hayward. I wish I knew that he was going to be sitting with Betts back, but oh well. So, again, I love Albert Suarez. I added Suarez in my 12-teamer, dropped Kyle Harrison. This is for the stream for yesterday's stream, I believe. Worked out well. Kershaw was available here. It's a keeper league, so who knows what happens. I added Kershaw, dropped Tyler Ferguson. Here's my other Cardinal move. So I added Dalton Varsho, and I dropped Lars Nootbaar. Nootbaar's been pretty bad lately, and especially in a 12-teamer like this. Even though it's daily, I'm like, he's not doing anything for me. I can spec on Varsho being somewhat of a bounce-back guy. Then I added Nolan Schanuel, dropped Rowdy. Sad move there. And then this morning I added Zebby Matthews. I dropped AJ Puck. Zebby is the Twins prospect who got called up to pitch tomorrow, I believe.
Yep.
So see how that one goes.
The good old daily moves, our first come, first serve moves right there, folks. The fun. All right, we'll talk about my OCs. Now this is where things get fun. Because I don't have a ton. I had about 85 to 95 bucks in most leagues. Not after this week, but I did. So I wasn't like complete dollar days, but I was trying not to go crazy. But I did get Jake McCarthy, dropped Miguel Andujar, got McCarthy for 13 bucks with a runner-up of 12, so that felt good. Got DL Hall, dropped Shane Boz, who's not going more than 3 to 4 innings, 5 to a runner-up of 4, so that felt good as well. And then I got Ty France, dropped Bryson Stott, 4 to nothing. And then I got good old Victor Vodnik, dropped Carlos Estevez, 2 to nothing. I have Vodnik in so many leagues, and he somehow is still available in this one. I guess I needed other pitching last week, so I put a small bid on Vodnik this week to get saves, and everyone was looking at Ryan Walker and Justin Martinez. Excuse me. So I go and get Victor Vodnik for $2. I will take that discount all day long. I don't care if he performs well. I'll take that discount compared to the other guys, because just in this league alone, Ryan Walker went for 29, and Justin Martinez didn't even get picked up. So welcome to OCs, folks. This is where the real fun begins. OC number two got McCarthy, dropped Heimer Candelario, who is broken right now. It felt weird with the full week in Great American, but he's not even playing every day with France and company. So I just moved on there. We'll see how that works. But I got McCarthy for 13, runner up a 6. Got Ty France, dropped Colt Keith, who's hit the skids, $3 to no runner up. Got DL Hall, dropped Jordan Montgomery, $3, no runner-up, and apparently now he's in a bullpen game with Ryan Nelson, so that's fun. Joe Musgrove, I picked him up to drop Camilo Duvall, 3-1. We'll see how that goes. And then got Joey Bart, dropped Mix Garver, 3-0. So a lot of small bids, no runner-ups, but I was happy with the additions I made for an OC for streaming purposes at least. And let's just see for fun in that league. Ryan Walker went for 16 in that league. And Justin Martinez went for $2 in that league. Oh, my God. OC3, Justin Martinez went for 39 in this league. Ryan Walker went for 38. So here you go. And OC3 is the one this whole season where nothing happens. So I legit put like a couple $2 bids and the rest were $1 bids this week. I got Michael Toglia, dropped Miguel Andujar, 1-0. They got Coors this weekend and early next week. And then this one I absolutely loved. And this was the drop that I thought it was controversial until I heard everyone do it, but I tweeted this out last week that I'm about to drop Garrett Crochet. So I dropped Garrett Crochet this week. Dropped him. Done. Especially in 12s. He's not going to get innings. He's broken right now. Whatever. Fine. I got Brian Bayo for $1 by dropping Garrett Crochet. I was over the – I thought there was zero chance I was getting Brian Bayo for $1. But I'll take – they've got two steps this week. He's not like an ace by any means, but he's a quality start machine with strikeouts right now. I'll take that all day long, especially on a Red Sox team that scores a lot of runs. So wins is an option there. So Brian Bayo for $1 all day, every day, and twice on Sunday made me very, very happy in that one. All right, Ben, that'll wrap us up. No listener questions this week, so we're good. It's August. Get used to it, folks. This is what's going to happen. It's that one other sport has kicked off, as they say. So they forget about, you know, the good people like us, but we're here all year round to get things going. But final thoughts, Ben, before we head out of here for another week of baseball action.
Yeah, while your league mates are worried about the other sport, just keep getting those $2, those $1 Brian Bayos, everyone, and you'll be set up for success the rest of the year. Yeah, it's great to be back again, Bubba. Thanks for having me. And hopefully the Batcast stuff was useful for everyone. Just don't, until we know more info about it, just don't get too crazy looking at it. Maybe for injury purposes, I think, is what I was speculating at the beginning of the year when it first came out. And I kind of stick to that for right now. But who even knows with that? I mean, people were coming off injuries or coming back, and I feel like the changes in speed were all over the place. But yeah, I'm glad we went over it, and hopefully we learned some more about it so we can use it eventually for something.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just a fun new thing that there's going to be a lot of learning from it. And we just got to play with it a little bit, and the more we – tinker with it, or you tinker with it, or whoever tinkers with it, it'll open up more like avenues to analysis, which will be fun. Just the biggest thing is, like a lot of us said when it first came out, let's just not overreact, folks. Let's try to let it breathe a little bit and figure it out. And I figure we've given it a few months. I don't think we overreacted. It was more just like, hey, look, this is kind of interesting. So right. That's the fun of these new new, I call them toys, but they, you know, the smart people that went to college call them statistics. That's kind of where we need to analyze these things. But yeah, it's always fun. And we'll wrap it up there before I give Ben too much more of a hard time here. But you can make sure you guys check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T and his written content over there at Sports Ethos. You can find me on Twitter @BDNTrick. And for now, this was Ben's with Bubba, episode 683. Catch you all next time.